The annual Midwest Sandhill Crane Count is coming up. It's a tradition that has been going on 30 years at least, maybe a little bit more. We'll find out as we visit with our two guests today, Jeb Barzin and Joan Garland from the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. Want to talk about that crane count that's coming up. You can still participate, if I'm not mistaken. Both my guests are shaking their heads yes. And also a chance for you to learn some more about those wonderful sandhill cranes that inhabit Wisconsin. There's lots of them. And if you have some questions about them or about the crane count itself, or maybe you've participated in the crane count in the past, we'd love to hear from somebody who participated as well. Tell us your own experiences and what you liked about it. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. Joan Garland, welcome. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And Jeb Barzin, always nice to have you back. Thanks for coming.
Well, thanks for having me. I have to admit the irony of today is that when I was here talking with you about Eagle Days in January, we had less winter then than we have now in April.
Yeah, isn't it something?
Yeah.
Lots of snow falling across a good share of Wisconsin right now, as you probably heard in the weather forecast. I tell you what, before we even get started in this, I do want to express my congratulations to you folks at the International Crane Foundation. You received a United Nations International Award for Best Practices to Improve Living Environment, and what a great honor that that is, and certainly congratulations, Jeb.
Well, thanks. It's, you know, it's obviously it's a large number of people who are involved, from the people working at FUMI in the Mekong Delta, as well as Tran Triet, and lots of other people have been involved in making this happen. And it's a real privilege to take this species that people look at and say, wow, that's cool. Mm-hmm. And from anywhere in the world. And that just makes such a difference of having something in common that you can begin to explore more complicated issues and solutions.
Yeah. What is it, Joan, what is it about cranes that captures people's imaginations?
That's a good question. I think it's, I mean, they're just gorgeous birds, very charismatic species. I think it's all over across the world, of course, they represent different things in different cultures. Some believe that they bring long life, happiness in marriage, symbols of good luck. I really think it's just their grace, their beauty. They're just magnificent birds.
Yeah. And their calls.
And their calls, yes. Their dances.
Yeah. Well, in North America, Leopold's Marshall and Elegy, you know, focuses just on that call and writes about it so eloquently. And, you know, and the point is that each different culture values something very different, but the fact that they all do value it gives us really something in common that we can work from.
Are the cranes pretty much back?
Most of the breeding cranes are back, but non-breeding cranes are still trickling in. We've had some arrive in the last few days. What people might not expect is that there are cranes sitting on eggs right now, keeping them warm, trying hard to keep them warm. And these kind of snow periods during the spring incubation times, most birds are successful at getting through that period, which mm-hmm. is really an amazing feat.
Yeah, and how many? Is it one egg or two eggs normally hatched with a crane? Or?
They'll normally hatch two eggs.
Normally hatch two.
But often they'll fledge one or fewer.
Mm. So it's pretty much one to a couple.
Well, it's the one child per parent planning process here.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's talk just a little bit more about that. The one thing is there a special mating ritual that goes on with the cranes? Do they mate for life, that sort of thing? And talk about that.
Well, this is a secret just between you and I and whoever might be listening. as we banded these birds and followed them for a very long period of time, we realized that their courtship behavior and their degree to which they'll pair and how long they'll pair for and that sort of thing is about as varied as it is in people.
Mm.
And but what people typically see is they'll see two pair of cranes in the same wetland each year, every year, for 20, 30, 40 years, their whole life, the whole time that they've spent on that land. And that's what people see as that strong pair bond. What we actually know is that there are some birds who will spend 20 years on that same wetland, but there are other birds who will go through a few mates and that sort of thing and have some diversity in their relationships. So there are things that get labeled as divorces and things that changes in mates, and sometimes if a mate dies, they'll replace that mate and that sort of thing. So it's a lot more interesting when you start marking birds, but the tail then isn't as conducive to the legends that arise from them.
Do they have a special mating dance or ritual or anything that they go through when they're getting ready to mate?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that people really focus on is that there's a wide variety of ways they go about, but it's generally called dancing. They'll throw sticks or pieces of vegetation. They'll jump. They'll call. The unison call is quite spectacular because the male and female call together. So that sounds like one voice, but it's actually two different calls that are done in unison with each other. And you can tell birds that aren't very well paired because the unison isn't quite there.
And they haven't really gotten together yet.
They haven't gotten it quite together yet. But real good pairs, it's just a beautiful, beautiful call.
Well, it is. And a lot of people are interested in cranes and love cranes. And John, maybe you could talk about this Midwest crane count, Sandhill crane count, a little bit. What's the history of this whole thing?
Sure. We're celebrating over 30 years. It started actually back in 1976, and it started as a project with a high school, a local area high school. And from that, it sort of just grew from there. And for a while, it was just sort of confined to the state of Wisconsin. But over time now, we have branched out, and now there's 5 states that participate in the crane count. We have over 3,000 volunteer counters from these 5 states. Some of them are very diehard. Some of them have been doing it, you know, since the late 70s. Mm-hmm. The count is really reliant on, obviously, these volunteers and also the county coordinators. Each county in these 5 states has a coordinator, and the coordinator is the one that gets a lot of that information from those various, you know, 3,000 counters. Some of the counties, of course, are rather large, some are smaller, but each county coordinator is responsible for gathering the data from the individual volunteers in their particular county and then sending that data on to us at the crane count. So it really is just a fantastic opportunity for people to get out, go out, experience nature. Hopefully the weather will improve by this coming weekend. But it's a wonderful opportunity for people to get out, experience nature, learn a little bit about cranes. It doesn't require any experience or knowledge on cranes. We provide training either through the county coordinators or through our website. And the count really provides us with a lot of valuable information. And Jeb can talk in a little bit about how some of that information is used. Mm-hmm. But it's a fantastic opportunity, like I said, to, you know, get out, experience some of these birds, hear their calls, see them. Recently, we've added whooping cranes to this count as well. For a long time, of course, it was just sandhill cranes. Now with the reintroduction of whooping cranes into the state, people may even have an opportunity to see one of the 60 whooping cranes or so that are out there right now. So,
And it's not like it's all an all-day event either, is it?
It's not. No, it's just 2 hours. It's kind of
early.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have to be an early riser. It is from 5:30 to 7:30 in the morning, and it's just 2 hours, just one day, this coming Saturday, the 14th. And there's still a lot of sites available. So if people are interested, we have sites, signed sites that a person can participate in and can go out and count, and there's still a lot of sites still available in various counties.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll challenge everyone. There's nothing better than watching dawn rise over a wetland as you're waiting to hear cranes call. And if people are really interested, what they can do is go out, find a book called The Sand County Almanac, and in it an essay called Marshland Elegy, written by Aldo Leopold, and read that the night before, and then go out and experience it.
That would be a great way to do it. Our guest Jeb Bardson today and Joan Garland of the International Crane Foundation. If you have a question about cranes or the crane count, or maybe you've participated in it and want to join in with your own questions or comments, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. We'll get you on the air. Jeb, talk about how the data are used that are collected.
The crane count data are used in a wide variety of ways. We often get people who will call and say, I have a wetland that I'm worried about it being developed. Do you have any data about crane use of those wetlands? And the crane count data are provided for people who want to evaluate the impacts of development in a variety of areas throughout Wisconsin. We've used the crane count in a fairly novel way recently as we've been dealing with the issue of crop damage that cranes cause. In the state, we've used crane count data to estimate where cranes are at their highest densities, and then we can focus on those areas to deploy the stuff that we're using to prevent crop damage in those areas. And so it's been very, very helpful for us in terms of identifying areas that are important. And then we can also use that to then predict where crop damage is going to be more important in places like Michigan and Minnesota that we know less about from direct information.
Well, we have some callers online, and so we'll go to the phones. Again, if you want to join us, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And let's take a call. Bob in Wisconsin Rapids, we'll go to you. Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Say, last year my wife and I observed a hooping crane that had taken up with a bunch of sandhill cranes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a common occurrence?
Get the hoopers in there with the sandhills, Joan?
That you were actually quite lucky to see that sighting. The total population of the whooping cranes that migrate from Wisconsin down to Florida right now is at 60 birds. And right now about 45, 47 of those birds are back in Wisconsin. So when you consider the sandhill population is around 15,000-17,000 in the state, to see one of those, 47 whooping cranes, that was definitely quite a sighting that you had.
So, but had you heard of it happening before?
Do they hang out together?
Yes. Oh, yes. Your question, if they hang out with sandhill cranes. As Jeb was talking about, the unpaired cranes will definitely, we've seen whooping cranes hanging out with sandhill cranes.
Yeah, this was a lone
individual. A lone whooping crane. Yep.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Wendy in Black River Falls, it's your turn. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I just happened to tune in. I love your show. And I'm trying to dig out the video right now that my husband helped with the music of. I believe the one that put it together, it was for the International Crane Foundation. I believe his name was Jeff Huxbury. Could be wrong. We had met him, and he had my husband put together some music to the video that he made for the Crane Foundation. And we've visited down there before, and we just love it. And what's really interesting is that my husband can sing to them, and they respond. I sing to them, and they're like,
go the other way.
You know, they're just like, I don't think so. But I wish I could find what I was talking about here because I didn't know you guys were going to be on, but it's a really beautiful video. They did the whole history on the cranes flying down and coming back up, and he's outside the Dells area down by there, and he works with this stuff. So.
Well, I bet Joan and Jeb know all about it. Joan?
I do, yes, and it's funny you called because the video that we have...
Is this you guys?
This is, yes. Yep.
Hi, this is Wendy.
Hi, Wendy. It's
Wendy
nice.
Sassman?
Yes, wonderful.
Yeah, Paul did some of the music for you guys.
Yep, and that video is part of the video that folks can see. Anybody that comes to the Crane Foundation, we show that video. In the past, we just showed it to people who were on a guided tour, but recently we've been showing it to folks pretty much every hour on the hour. If you come to the Crane Foundation, you can see the video. And Jeff Huxman helped us to produce that, and you're right, and your husband, I believe, did the music, and it's a fantastic video. It really is. And Jeff also helped us as well, for those of you participating in the Crane Count, the Crane Count training video that we have that's available to people, and it's also available on our website. Jeff also helped us produce that as well.
Very cool. Thank you very much, Wendy, for calling. Appreciate it. Jeb Barzin and Joan Garland are guests from the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo talking about the return of the Sandhill Cranes. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking the International Crane Foundation today, it's the traditional Sandhill Crane Count coming up this Saturday. You can still participate in it, and we'll talk some more about getting involved and what goes on with it, and hopefully we'll have some people who have participated in the past to call in and make their comments as well. Join in at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And let's go to Kathleen in Arkansas, Wisconsin. Kathleen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I have participated in the past, and I had a question. Last year, we heard cranes from quite a long distance away from the site where we were counting, just barely at the edge of my hearing ability. And we are curious how far their calls actually carry. Is there a way to estimate how far away you're hearing them from when you hear them?
How far you can hear cranes depends on what kind of day that you have. You often can hear them much farther in the morning because the air is cold and sound is conducted better in cold air. Sometimes if it's more humid, it's easier to hear them at a greater distance. And it's not uncommon to hear cranes at, 1 to 2 kilometers away, so almost a mile away. Basically, you can sometimes hear cranes when the conditions are right or if you have a slight wind that's allowing the sound to drift towards you.
All right.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thanks very much.
You bet. Tom in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Tom.
Yes, hi, and good morning to everybody.
Good morning.
Say, I have an observation and a question, I guess, but on November 10th, I remember this specifically. It was, in fact, about a year and a half ago, so I'm either late or ahead of the game as far as the season, but be as it may, we live about 3 miles south of Eau Claire. And I heard the call of the cranes. And usually, typically, I'll just look to the horizon, and you'll see two or three flying across. And that's fairly typical. But on this day, I didn't see anything. And so, for whatever reason, I just glanced straight up. And lo and behold, I think maybe about 400 feet up in the air, there had to be roughly 100 of these birds. And I was just awestruck. And I thought, what is this? I have never heard of that, and I don't know if this is typical or whatever. They were like in a large circular area, so to speak, almost like they're treading air or something, getting ready to go south. But what can you tell me? Is that a typical thing, and how do they I've never heard of them flying in a V formation or whatever, but in any case, this was new to me.
Hmm. Well, you actually interpreted what you saw quite well. They're likely birds that were migrating. But one of the things that's really fun about cranes is that they're soaring birds, and they migrate using thermal lifts that occur off the ground. And what you are seeing is birds found a thermal. Birds can't see thermals, except they can see other birds in thermals. And so once a bird gets into a thermal, the birds will congregate, and they'll be in this kind of melee, and they're just all circling at different elevations, but basically they're going up, and they'll go up and up and up, circling without flapping their wings much at all. And then once they get to the top of that thermal, then they'll fly or flap or glide to the next thermal, and then they go back up and then move to the next. And it's a way of migrating without using it nearly as much energy as if they're just flapping from one point to another. So it's fairly typical migratory behavior. That's a typical time for birds to be moving. You were possibly seeing birds moving from, say, the Upper Peninsula or Michigan, Upper Peninsula of Michigan, or from Minnesota into the state, and where they're going to stay for another couple weeks before going further south.
I see, yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah, that's... it was, like I said, I've never seen it before, and I may never see it again. It was
a great sight.
A fantastic sight. So thank you very much.
Thanks, sure. Tom. What's the what does a sandhill crane roughly weigh, and what is its wingspan? As this soaring business as you're talking about here, how do they, they've got pretty good wingspan, and they can get a little lift. Joan, do you know offhand?
Their weight generally is around 12 pounds,
okay.
So they're not very heavy. Wingspan, probably around six, I'd imagine.
Six to seven. One of the reasons why Joan is here is to translate, because I can only remember the weight of cranes in kilograms.
So about 12 pounds or so. And,
exactly.
But then with a 6-foot, 6-7-foot wingspan, they get a lot of lift.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
All right, Fred in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Fred.
Hi. I've got a question for your guest regarding the whooping crane program that is now, I understand, has been terminated as a result of these really strong tornado with storms that swept across Florida earlier this year and wiped out the cranes down there, except for like maybe one of them. And apparently both same cranes laid eggs in Wisconsin for the first time in like 100 years, and we had like two or three chicks. And I want to know, are they going to continue that program, and are we going to ever have cranes back in Wisconsin breeding again?
All right, Joan.
Yes. To answer your question, yes, we are definitely continuing that program. The storms that occurred, it was February 1st, February 2nd down in Florida, unfortunately did kill 17 of the 18 ultralight lead birds. From the class of 2006, from this past year, we still actually have five whooping crane chicks from 2006. There was the one that did survive the storms that was down at Chazawitska National Wildlife Refuge. And then there was the chick that was produced last year up at Nisida. And that chick successfully migrated back to Wisconsin with its parents. And then there was actually three other whooping cranes from 2006 that were released using a supplemental technique that we call the direct autumn release. And this technique, the birds are raised very similarly to the ultralight lead birds in that they're raised in isolation by biologists and crane costumes, but instead of being trained or conditioned to follow the ultralights, they are released with older cranes up at the Nisida National Wildlife Refuge. So we have still five whooping cranes from 2006, and we are definitely continuing that project now more so than ever. The various captive breeding centers, the one that's out in Laurel, Maryland, the Patuxent Wildlife Research Center, they apparently have cranes right now that are on eggs, incubating eggs. The Crane Foundation, we're just beginning our breeding season as well. So yes, we are definitely continuing that project. We'll be continuing both the ultralight lead part of the project as well as that direct autumn release project. And then also very exciting news is that a pair of cranes that successfully fledged that whooping crane chick last year, they are on a nest again this year. And we actually had one of our biologists up at the Crane Foundation who saw one of the eggs the other day, Dr. Richard Urbanek, who works with Fish and Wildlife Service, has been monitoring them, and he actually saw them on an egg. So we've got whooping cranes on nests as we speak.
I think the other thing I would add is that the just to make it clear that we did have birds from the 2006 cohort survive, but there's also very few, if any, birds from the previous years or cohorts that did die during the storm. Mm-hmm. And so the population of whooping cranes in Wisconsin currently is roughly about 60 birds, although they're not all back in Wisconsin yet. Some are taking their while in getting here. Mm-hmm. But so that it was a impact or a blow to the program, but it wasn't at all a crucial blow or something that just eliminated the program completely.
Okay. Thanks, Fred. Appreciate it very much. And Jake in Sauk Prairie, your turn. Hi, Jake.
Hi. I was wondering, do cranes die more in Wisconsin or in their migration route or down south?
Hi, Jake. Migration is a pretty risky thing for birds, and many birds do die in migration. The most risky period of a crane is from when it's hatched in an egg until it can fledge. That's when most of the birds die. The next risky period is from after they fledge until they migrate. The next risky time is during migration, and then all the other times kind of fall in after that. That, by the way, was my son, Jake, asking the question.
That was very cool. Thanks, Jake. Thanks for calling. And let's take some more calls here. We've got some open lines again, so you can get on with your own question or information about the crane count, questions about that as well. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And now we go to Ella in Helenville. Ella, hello to you. Thanks for calling.
Well, hello. I just have some comments about the cranes. My husband and I have been counting for several years, and everyone should try that. It's fun. They always told us to watch for cranes that have bands on their legs, and I thought, oh, my gosh, that would be impossible. How are you going to see a band? And my daughter goes out looking all at all the cranes, and she actually has found some with bands on their legs, and I've seen one now, too. So we have pictures of those, and it's just really interesting. And I wondered if sandhill cranes ever lay down other than on their nest, and sure enough, the next day my daughter found one laying down and one standing next to it, and they were, like, taking a little nap, and it's just really fun. And they're great birds.
They are.
That sounds good. Please send us those pictures of banded cranes. The observations from folks like you are really, really helpful in giving us an idea of how the birds that we band in our study area disperse out through the other parts of Wisconsin. And currently I have a PhD student who's working on just that very question, and so we'd love to, if you want to send us an email, you can reach me at Jeb, that's J-E-B as in boy, at savingcranes, that's one word in plural, .org.
Savingcranes.org.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
And well, you know, knowing when you saw it and roughly where you were when you saw it and the picture of the bands or anything else that you saw with the birds would be really helpful.
Really helpful.
And that's true with both whooping cranes as well as with sandhill cranes.
Exactly. Yes. Yep. Any banded cranes that you see out there, we definitely want that information.
Now, the banding, where do the birds get banded, or why are the birds banded? Obviously, to watch and be able to tell dispersal and so forth, but tell us about that process a bit.
Well, I couldn't tell you about birds divorcing each other or repairing or doing all sorts of shenanigans without the data of birds with colored bands on their legs. We've been banding sandhill cranes for 18 years in an area near Briggsville, Wisconsin. It's basically where Adams, Columbia, and Marquette County all come together.
Mm-hmm.
It's a happening place for cranes. And so we've been doing research on those birds for a long period of time to learn more about their ecology, where they go with crop damage, why they were doing the damage that they were doing, how we could stop those sorts of problems, but also more in general of why they're increasing and that sort of thing. And so it's been a really important part of our program to ban these birds and then for people like Ella to see them and report them into us. Most of the birds that we get, that we see outside of our study area, come from sightings that people give to us, so that they're really crucial. And we use a banding system that's what's I call redundant, and that there's different ways to identify the bird. You can read the number on a tall band, and we can know who the bird is. Or you can look at the color combinations on different sides of the leg and tell us what the bird is. Or if you have a dead bird, you can read the Fish and Wildlife Service band that's on the leg. Any one of those, we can tell who the individual is. Now, our needs are a little bit different from the whooping cranes.
Yep, the whooping cranes, since we started in 2001 with this project, we have banded every whooping crane that has been released. And those birds are banded mainly so that we can track and monitor those birds, especially since it's a brand new population. We're very interested, of course, in where the birds are migrating, the type of habitat that they're using, not only here in the Midwest, but also down in Florida. So we have a team of folks who monitor those birds, track and monitor them pretty much throughout the year, mainly during spring and fall migration, but then they continue to monitor them when they're up here in the Midwest and Wisconsin and then down in Florida as well.
Cool.
So really basic questions like what Jake asked can't be answered without having birds with bands on them.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks, Ella, for calling. Appreciate it. And Dick in Cornell will give you a chance. Hi, Dick.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Look forward to springtime. I've got a pair of sandhills that have been sort of taking residence in my hayfield out in the back of my house, so every year I get to watch them. My question is, what's the biggest predator threat to the sandhills?
Yeah.
It depends on what stage of life that they're at, but probably collectively it would be the coyote. The coyote typically will feed on chicks or young cranes, especially before they can fly. Coyotes aren't very successful at getting to nests. Cranes can defend their nests quite well. They sit on the eggs almost constantly, either the male or the female incubating, and they can. I've watched them drive coyotes away from nests. I'm almost sure that coyotes know where most of the nests are. in an area, and but they can protect their nest quite well. But once the chicks are able to walk, which is very soon after they hatch, then it's a lot harder to protect them, and they're susceptible to coyote mortality. Raccoons probably can take young crane chicks, or might take an egg if they can get access to it, and mink and things like that. A crane chick could even be eaten by a good muskie in a breeding wetland. Larry would probably want to know that for his muskie fishing. But a coyote is probably the biggest predator of cranes in Wisconsin.
That's a big problem we have because I raise sheep, and we do have quite a few coyotes around.
Yeah, it's... The coyote population is as thriving or even more so than our cranes.
Well, but and it's important that the cranes, though coyotes are big predators of cranes, the crane population is thriving. So
yep.
It's not a dampening impact on the cranes. But one thing that people don't understand oftentimes is that it's a fairly rare thing, actually, for cranes to successfully fledge chicks. When we... Over the years, we have an average of about, if you can imagine this, we have an average of about somewhere between a quarter to three quarters of a chick per pair that gets fledged. Now, a quarter of a chick is hard to imagine, but what it means is that typically one out of four territories will fledge a chick.
You know, we've had several people call in who would like to sign up for the crane count, but they don't have access to a website, so they want to know what they can do. Actually been several people. So can you give us a phone number or
sure.
how do we do this, Joan?
There are several different ways. You can call the Crane Foundation at 608-356-9462 and just ask for Crane Count, and they can get you connected to the right department. You can also visit our website, we have a website specifically for Crane Count, which is www.cranecount.org, and that will also get you into all the information that you need to participate. And you can also email, and to email, you would email naturalists, so N-A-T-U-R-A-L-I-S-T-S, naturalists, at savingcranes, and again, that's savingcranes, plural, .org. So.
And again, that number is area. The phone number is 608-356-9462, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so that's – and we should talk a little bit more about what goes on. So it's 5:30 to – this coming Saturday, 5:30 to 7:30 in the morning.
Correct. Yep, this coming Saturday, the 14th, 5:30 to 7:30. And people will get a data sheet, essentially. And again, you don't have to have any prior experience or knowledge. We have training videos on our website, and also we could get you in touch with a county coordinator that could also provide information, and we also have training materials that we can provide to you as well. And you would have a data sheet. You can do this as an individual, as a family group. Several people can go out and count all together, and you would get assigned a site in the county that you would like to participate in. So you would get a site assigned to you and then a data sheet. And you would go out from 5:30 to 7:30 in the site that's been assigned. And the sites are generally about a square mile territory size. And we make sure, obviously, that it's accessible. You don't have to, you know, don waders or anything and actually go walking out into the wetlands. It's all very accessible. And on the data sheet is going to be the information that we're looking for. So obviously, if you can, you know, see cranes, physically see cranes, if you hear cranes, this is some of the information we're looking for. We're also looking for information on pairs. And we can explain all that to you as well, specifically what to look for in trying to identify a pair of cranes. And so for those 2 hours, you would be out in the wetland recording the cranes that you would see or hear. You can also record other species that you happen to encounter in the wetland, see or hear. And then at the end of that two-hour time period, you would send your data sheet or give your data sheet to the coordinator who is coordinating your particular county. And then that person will send all the sheets to the Crane Foundation, where we will gather the results. We have a database that we keep track of all this, and then send out the results to you. And as a benefit of participating in the Crane Count, in addition to helping to contribute this valuable information to us, you also receive free admission for everybody
cool.
that counts. Yep, so you can come and visit us at the Crane Foundation.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you know what? We have the song or the call of the sandhill crane, and we can thank Lang Elliott for that from his book, The Songs of Wild Birds. And let's just give a quick listen here, see if I've got it set up right here.
One of the most beautiful songs of the eastern deciduous forest is the flute-like melody of the wood thrush.
Oh, wrong one. Let's try a different one. Let's see if we can find the right one. The wood thrush is pretty, but
it's a great call. It's a little early to hear a wood thrush.
Well, let me see if I've got it right this time.
In the North Woods and Western Mountain states, the fluty songs of the hermit thrush.
I obviously have this index screwed up somehow. For some reason, I just don't have the right thing. I was hoping we'd be able to listen to it. And the number that I have, the index, is not the correct index. So I'm not sure what's going on there. Anyway, we'll go to Richard in Milwaukee. Richard, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I just want to relate. I was riding my bicycle on the Interurban Trail last May one morning between Cedarburg and Mequon, and I had a pair of sandhill cranes cross the trail along with two young ones. So I was wondering how long it takes before, once they're hatched, before they, they're big enough to fly and leave the nest.
It's about 10 weeks for them to go from hatch to flying, which means that they're structurally just about full size.
Okay.
Which is quite an amazing feat, you think about mm-hmm. it. 10 weeks is not a very long time to go from an egg, which is, what is an egg? It's about 4 or 5 inches long to mm-hmm. a bird that stands 4'5".
So then, like, these birds, probably the little ones were maybe 12 inches tall or something. How old would they have been? When would they have been hatched?
Well, how high, when you saw the birds, how high were they compared to the parents?
Oh, maybe halfway up the legs, not quite, maybe third.
So they were probably 3 weeks, maybe?
Oh, okay.
4 weeks old?
Now, is that fairly rare sighting? I got within 15 feet of them, and they just crossed the bike trail right in front of me.
Well, fortunately, it's less of a rare sight now than it has been in the past. I don't think the parents were impressed with you being that close.
No, I heard about that, yeah. Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I was going to try once more, but I guess I'm just not going to be able to find the right number.
Well, Larry, while you try, I'll put in another pitch. Ella, you know, she snuck in a great thing saying crane count is fun. And, you know, there are, what are there, Joan, 3,000 counters?
There are 3,239 counters from last year.
So good to have people who have real information. It's a lot of counters. And in order to pull that off, the interest of people like yourselves is just critical. And it's fun, and it's great that people are wanting to participate, both the people who have been doing it for decades, and I do mean decades, people who want to do it for the very first time. It's a count that's fun for all those folks, whether we can reproduce the call on air or not. I'm not going to do the crane call because I don't want to ruin your equipment.
Well, I tell you what, the next time you're on, I'll check beforehand, you know, and I'll have the call of the sandhill crane. So again, that number to call is 608-356-9462, or what's the website again for those who want to go?
The website is www.cranecount.org.
Thank you both very much for being with us. It's going to be a lot of fun this weekend, Saturday morning.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Jeb Barzin and Joan Garland from the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo, Wisconsin. Boy, I tell you what, it's a great opportunity to get out in the marsh. You're out from 5:30 to 7:30 in the morning, so you'll feel great, and you'll know that you've done a good thing, and you'll still have the whole day in front of you. What more could be better than that?
About 7:15, that coffee tastes pretty good.
All right. Thanks again. Coming up, you know, speaking about being outside, I like to bike. I do a lot of bicycling. And we're going to be talking about biking Wisconsin and beyond with a couple of guests, Eric and Kathy Schramm, coming up next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.